This is another Australian Baby Boomer podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Australian Baby Boomer podcast. Today's guest is Kath, who has spent the last 10 years developing her artistic practice with an emphasis on portrait painting. I was fortunate to be invited to her home to view her paintings before interviewing her about her life and work. The emphasis of this interview is on her artistic practice. Kath's portraits demonstrate a wonderful depth that hint at the inner life of the subjects. To my mind, it is this that draws the viewer in and is likely to maintain interest long past the first viewing. Although it is mainly in her retirement years that Kath has concentrated on her art, as you will hear, the drive to draw and paint was always there. Kath was born into a deeply religious family and spent her early years at Mount Margaret Mission before her family moved to Warburton. She mentions her belief that creative endeavour is an expression of God the Creator. As for her work as a teacher, I felt that what came across most strongly in this interview was Kath's honouring of the people whose portraits she has painted as she honoured the children and young adults that she taught throughout her career. I hope you enjoy listening to this interview as much as I enjoyed meeting Kath to discuss her art.
My name's Kath Moore. I was Kathleen Mack and eldest child of Claire and Wallace Mack, and we were about fifth generation Australians, and I was born in Bridgetown, and I'm now 75 years old and quite healthy and enjoying my life.
You've been doing some beautiful portrait work, and I thought perhaps we could start by where that started, where that interest started in doing art and being artistic.
Well, certainly, because I started out as a four-year-old at Mount Margaret Mission, which is sort of north of Kalgoorlie, and until I was four I was there, but that's when I started school, really, because my mother was my teacher, and I think she got sick and tired of having me around and wanting to do things. So she found some reading books and she got me started. And then we left that place and we went to Warburton. Now this is where the art really starts, because that landscape really spoke to me. I just, even as a child, I could never get over how beautiful it was. We talk now about fields of everlastings and flocks of birds and the blue sky and the red earth, and all of that was mine from when I was a child. And I was profoundly affected by it. And the gum trees were just absolutely wonderful along the creek. And the Aboriginal children and Aboriginal people were to me very beautiful. And I thought they were magnificent. And so then I was drawing. I can remember the first time I had a box of coloured pencils, which would have been when I was three or four, and I couldn't get over the shades, the colours. I just thought they were magnificent. And so I was drawing from that time. But the portrait aspect came a bit later, because I read a book. We did School of the Air. Well, actually, the air didn't work very well for us, and so we had the correspondence school. We only listened to the School of the Air occasionally. And from the correspondence school, we had books, lots of books. So that became an addiction, of course. Mm. I just read and read and read. And one book was about a girl who drew people, and she drew all her friends, and they could be recognised. I thought that was absolutely miraculous. I didn't think there could ever be a time when I would draw a picture of somebody and people would know who it was. Mm. I thought that was just wonderful.
So how old were you at this time?
probably 7 or 8. Yes, yeah, so I was drawing all the time, really. And people were quite encouraging. You know, people have encouraged me throughout my life, really, because they could see that I just couldn't see a pencil without wanting to draw. Mm. And my father became sick, and we went down to Esperance to live, and he actually died there. And I was in the primary, I was at school at Esperance Primary School. There wasn't actually a high school at that time, although it became a junior high school probably not long after. And the principal of that school actually gave me some drawing and painting gear and encouraged me to do a painting every week and bring it and show it to him. But one of the things about me at that time was that I was rather flighty and rather lazy, and so I didn't necessarily take up all the opportunities that were given to me. Yeah. But I just drew, and actually there were teachers in the school too, which only went up to year 10, who were good at teaching. One of them was a manual arts teacher, and he taught us about perspective, and it was lovely, really. We did junior art, and we had our portfolios, and another lady was, you know, were able to teach a bit of art as well. So my life really was dominated by the fact that we had a very strong belief in God, and as a creator, and the kind of author of all kinds of creative activities. And so opportunities were given to me in drama and art and music and teaching. All through my life I had great opportunities to express myself in these ways. Mm. I was still reading, of course, all the time. And then I came to Perth to go to high school at John Curtin, where we had the most wonderful art teacher. Mm. And his name was Henry Frudist, and obviously he would have come from Poland after the war. And there's a wonderful art studio at John Curtin. So again, you know, I was given wonderful opportunities.
Yeah. So John Curtin had subsequently has become a specialist school, hasn't it, for the
That's
arts?
Right.
And I wonder if something of the history of that from having
that
come through.
Yes.
So your father passing away at a very when you were young, did that impact on your art? Did you use the art in any way to deal with that?
I hadn't thought of it like that. He was actually into music. He was a wonderful singer, music has been a big part of my life. And but he actually, even when he was in hospital, he was doing a bit of painting, so he obviously was pretty interested in it. The fact that he went when I was sort of 11 means that I don't really feel that I knew him terribly well. Mm. He was into building and making and all sorts of things like that. And then he was always singing, and that was lovely. But I felt that my mother probably impacted on my life much more than my father.
Mm. And was she a creative person, your mother?
Yes, because it's interesting, she didn't get married until she was 35, and she had me when she was 36, and then she had 4 more children.
Mm.
And then, you know, she would have only been married to my father for 13 years, and then he died.
Mm.
And but she was very resilient. She was the sort of person who'd grown up in a big family and learned through rough and tumble to look after herself and get on with things.
Mm.
And she'd been involved during the war with concerts where, as she said, she couldn't sing, but she could recite. And so she was really into encouraging us all with public speaking, drama, all kinds of things like that. Mm. And you would think that Esperance, which was very isolated at the time, wouldn't have many opportunities, but we joined the guides and we did all sorts of concerts and had all sorts of good times.
Sometimes I think that country towns have more of a social life. There's a community sense, isn't there?
Yes.
When you were doing that art at that age, did you feel that that would become a career for you in the future? Or you said you came up here and you went to
Then I came again to go to Teachers College.
Teachers College, yeah.
Actually, I think teaching was exactly the right thing for me, particularly primary teaching. Mm-hmm. I had thoughts of being a nurse, and that's because of books that I read, which were a little overly glamorous, mm-hmm. about the nursing profession. I thought they'd be lovely, but my mother had been a nurse and she kindly said to me that she thought it might be a good idea if I did teaching. There weren't many alternatives, were there, in those days. They looked so lovely in their uniform, just great, and my mother knew that the reality would probably kill me, so...
Yeah.
And then I read a real nursing book once and that fixed me properly.
It's a tough profession, I think.
Yes, so teaching was great. I did junior method at Claremont, and everything I did I really loved. So we did pottery, we did art, we learned to teach little children to read, which is absolutely wonderful. And when I went out to my first school, I was thrilled to pieces, and I just filled the whole classroom with pictures and got the children to do them, and we had drama and music and the whole whole bit. And after that, I did all sorts of other teaching and ended up in English as a second language. And I established the Intensive English Centre at Northlake Senior Campus at the end of my career. And I just loved doing that. But again, my students were, a lot of them were refugees, and they were battling with English. And the very best ways to teach them to read and write was to use drama and music and art and all of those things to just get to their creative ability and instincts, because they were lacking in technical skills and all sorts of other things. But quite often they'd come from refugee camps with wonderful music and wonderful artistic skills. And so to build on those was a good idea, and encouraged them, gave them confidence. And we used to have assemblies at Northlake, and we used to have plays at our assemblies, and we always sang. Mm. And that was a great, great finish to my career in teaching.
Mm.
Those students were much older than when I'd started with the five-year-olds. They were up to 21 and over sometimes, and... But I love them all, and I just love that type of teaching.
And it sounds like you had a fairly open slather in terms of your approach to teaching, that you had to be quite creative in finding the right way to enable the person to have the best chance of learning.
Yes. Well, you know, we did training, of course. I had to do quite a lot of extra teaching training after
ESL
the initial 2 years. Mm. In ESL, but it seemed to me that all the things I really love to do seemed to be appropriate in the situation.
Mm.
And the way to communicate, really communication was the name of the game, and that's really what we were trying to do all the time. So having varied ways of communicating is very important, because a school day is quite long, and you need to have a lot of different resources. If people can't speak your language or read your books, you need to be able to get through to them in lots of different ways.
Mm. Mm. So the creativity, which is something that you develop through artistic practice, can be generalised to other situations such as teaching.
Yes.
To be able to think of alternatives, I guess, to be able to find the best way of finding a road in.
That's right, yes.
Were you drawing all this time while you were doing your teaching? Or
Yes, on the whiteboard.
Right.
You know, very often when we read novels to students, I'd be drawing on the whiteboard.
Mm.
And worksheets, doing art for worksheets.
Mm.
But really, if I went into a Jackson store at that time in my life when I was busy teaching, I really didn't sort of know where to start. It's all sort of receded a bit formally, doing painting or something like that. I did have a few years when I did pottery, because some of the units at Edith Cowan that were offered for ESL or extra teaching were pottery, and so I did lots of those and had a good time making little figurines and things because I wasn't really good on the wheel. And that fitted in with the family and the teaching and whatever else. But as far as actually painting anything seriously, that all went, that was all packed away.
Mm. So it must have been there to re-emerge once you retired. Is that when it sort of all started to blossom again?
Exactly. Right. 10 years ago, about 10 years ago, I just went straight to Claremont School of Art and enrolled in everything. and it was a fair, it was a shock really, because I realised that it was quite demanding. And if I was going to do it properly, I'd have to do it properly. And so I did. But I wasn't necessarily a great success or anything like that. You know, I'd often come home quite flattened. But, of course, it was absolutely marvellous. And
so what did the course involve?
So there were usually three-hour sessions. And the first one I went to was sort of meant to introduce you to all kinds of ways of making a picture and all kinds of mediums. Is that the right word? Medium, you know, like.
Yeah.
So I'd just come out of the classroom. It was a bit like when I did another course in my long service leave, and I was required to write an essay. And I thought, how will I do that? And I'd just been teaching ESL students how to write an essay, so I thought, well, perhaps I better take notice of what I did. But anyway, when I went to Claremont School of Art, I walked into the room and there were easels. Now, would you believe that I'd never used an easel? And now I wouldn't use anything else. But I walked into the room and the teacher wasn't there. I was shocked and horrified. I thought, what kind of an establishment is this if the teacher is late?
It's an art school, isn't it?
This was my
your introduction.
Departmental mindset, that things had to be done in a certain way. But when he came, of course, he was wonderful, and he introduced us to everything, like charcoal, pastels, which I knew nothing about, just drawing, perspective, and he wasn't sort of hard line in any way at all, but you know, he was demanded a certain standard, and it was demanding, I found, to do it. And I realised how much I didn't know. But then he took us outside one day with our pastels, and you know, even that was a shock to me, because he came out with a great big box, all these dirty looking little stubs of pastel, and I thought, how shocking. But that's how pastels get.
That's right.
And so I still have a big gum tree from down there in the yard that I drew when I was part of that particular class. And it fills me with satisfaction. I really love it. And that's because he took us outside and just got us to do it. So that went to that progressed then to... then I felt I should do life drawing, and of course life drawing is very, very demanding. But the teacher who took us for that had great sense of dignity and professional know-how, and so that was really, really valuable. And he also introduced us to the idea of having a sketchbook and just sketching wherever we were all the time, everything.
Like a visual diary.
Yes, visual diary, that's right. And so, yes, and from there I went to many portrait classes, and I realised that, you know, drawing, to be able to draw, is actually very important if you think you're going to get a likeness. One class I went to, which wasn't at Claremont, but another one, weekend class or something, I remember the teacher saying, Well, 1 millimetre out, no likeness. And I think that's true.
Wow. So it's that fine. Mm. It's a, even just a brush stroke or a pencil mark or something.
You know, it is very exacting. There's no doubt about that.
Mm.
And I think my attitude was a little bit like sort of what it had been in the past when I was younger. Just slap the paint on, you know, and sometimes accidents happen and it's wonderful.
Mm.
But I found that just didn't satisfy me anymore. I just love other people's abstract paintings and I would like to abstract a little more than I do. But at that stage, I really, really wanted to get it right.
Mm.
So then I moved on to a group over at Atwell where they had a sitter coming every week and we just painted them. And then I wasn't very well. My eyes needed fixing with cataract operations. And then I had this sickness which made me get a pacemaker. And so I was sort of dropped my bundle a little bit and it seemed less challenging to just do some tea towels with flowers on and cushion covers, and I quite enjoyed doing that.
Mm.
And so I did that for quite a while. And then I went back to portrait painting and found out about the Angel School of Art in Florence. And my husband and I went to Italy and we went to the school. We lived behind the Duomo in Florence and we walked to the school every day. And there were only 13 students, some from America, some from Sydney, and no others from Western Australia. And I've never actually met anyone else who's been there from Western Australia, but it was really magnificent. But do you know that Dreyfus Gates had taught us down at Claremont School of Art, and there were other portrait painters too who taught us.
Mm.
And he told us all the same things, really, that I learnt in Italy.
Mm.
But at that stage, I wasn't ready to take it seriously.
Take it on.
Whereas because of course, I was paying exorbitant amounts of money to go to Florence, and also I sincerely wanted to get it right, I did everything by the book. We went to this beautiful art shop and bought our little book list of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite a restricted palette. If you saw the palette, you'd think, my goodness, what do you get out of that? And it was a purpose-built building, and each of us could sit every day and watch while our teacher drew from the live model, and then two people to one model every day. So the model came every day and we had ample opportunity to just have them sitting there in the right light and to do it.
Mm.
And so although it was just a little summer school really, every day was exhausting and exhilarating and made all the difference. It just brought everything together.
Right.
Since I've written a letter to Dreyfus and said, Dreyfus, I just wanted to tell you that, you know, I went to Florence because I'm sure that you thought that I was a fairly unimpressive student when I was at Claremont School of Art, and I just wanted to tell you that you actually told me all the right things, but then I learnt them all again in Florence and it's all come together. But, you know, without him, without Dreyfus and without Claremont School of Art, it would have meant nothing, really.
Mm. The school in Florence, how many weeks was that? Well, was
it was
weeks?
Only 2 weeks.
2 weeks of intensive going every day and working.
Right. Just painting all day. Some of the students were magnificent. Some had done it before and some were staying on to do a Caravaggio course, actually copying a Caravaggio painting. And all around there were plaster casts and things like you hear about in very, very traditional form of portrait painting, because we were not the regular students who were there all the time. We were just a summer school, but we weren't put through that. But it was very, very clear that drawing was at the good drawing was at the heart of the whole matter.
When you said you had a restricted palette, were you talking about colours?
Yes, we were taught to put the certain colours on the palette in a sequence. So it was really just white, burnt umber, red, particular bright red, and yellow ochre, and maybe another umber, possibly a green umber and a red umber, but that's all.
And is that something that you've continued to do with your
Absolutely.
Work?
Absolutely, and that's what I use now, and it gives me a sense of security, really, because I think before I just didn't quite know how everything was going to get together, and it's true, I still don't, but I've got a reasonable chance now of having some sort of result that I'll be happy with, you know. We primed the board with umber as well, and I still do that. Yes, and get the darks very dark and the lights very light. So some of these principles are with me now, and, you know, I'm really thankful for them, really thankful.
And the colours are in relationship to one another, aren't they?
Yes.
It's a sense. So depending on which colour goes with which, that changes the way they appear.
That's right. The quantity of each one, you know, makes it vary.
Yeah.
Yes. And, of course, you'd use other colours for the clothes and that kind of thing, perhaps. Yes, so I'm very, very grateful for that. So when I came back, I set to work. And, of course, with portrait painting, it's quite delicate to get your subjects, because people don't necessarily think it's a nice idea. So I've used all my family. And then I had to really sort of be quite brave in asking people if I could paint their portrait. And so most people have been very cooperative and very encouraging, and that's good, but I still find it difficult.
You're listening to an Australian Baby Boomer podcast, and I'm speaking with Kath Moore, who is a portrait artist. At this point, I asked Kath where she uses photography and where she uses live sitting.
Mainly for their face, but if there's a lot of extraneous matter, like, you know, the things they make or their clothes, that I don't make them sit while I do that.
And with the expression on the face, because you showed me a couple of the portraits earlier, and I was really fascinated with the way that you get something of the inner person that comes through the face. And is that something you're observing at the time, or do you internalise it? And I'm not quite sure how to ask the question, because I guess people's expressions change from moment to moment.
That's right, yes. It's a very good question, and I'm not really sure how to answer it. I think I do get quite emotionally involved with people, and I feel as if I get to know them a little bit. I try. Usually, it's expected that you won't do them smiling, and that's quite a difficult thing, because some people are very smiley, and that's part of their personality, and it's pretty hard to just draw them, paint them not smiling. But they do show themselves, I think, just in repose, in sitting there. They do show some of these characteristics, you know, and I think it is rather fortunate if you are able to get something of the inner person. I'm rather thrilled that you said that.
That's what it struck me immediately about the portraits.
Thank you.
With painting, I guess when you have a subject in front of it's a focus and a flow that you get into often with something that you're totally engaged in. Do you find that it's a helpful meditation practice?
Wonderful when you are painting. I'm constantly switched into Classic FM, and yes, it's lovely.
When you're painting, has that changed the way that you actually see things? When you look at something, do you see things differently to the way that you might have seen them before you were doing that?
I don't know. I'm always powerfully affected by things that I see, you know. No. And I think that's a lifetime thing, probably.
So you've always been quite an observer.
Yes. People are more interesting to me than anything else, although I am interested in everything else. Mm. But people used to say to me when I was younger, what are you staring at? So obviously, at bus stops and things, I stare at people.
You're a people watcher.
That's right. Yes.
I think that goes with writing as well. It's one of those things that you do.
Yeah. Oh, I was in the bus one day coming home and there was a most beautiful old couple sitting there and they were dressed magnificently for a day out. And she had a red hat on and a grey jacket, and then she had a red scarf, and all her nails were beautifully done. And she had rings, and he had a Panama hat, which is an absolute. That's the end. I have to paint people in Panama hats. And he had his jacket on and a black shirt or something like that. Yes, a black shirt. And I just looked at them. And finally, in the end, as I was about to get out, I said, look, I'm sorry, I've been looking at you so much, but you just look so gorgeous. And she said to me, people always say that to me. And he said, she won't let me wear jeans or anything like that. I always have to dress up.
That's the way to go, isn't it?
Yes, I do look at things a lot.
And do you think coming to art in retirement has been a different thing than if you'd pursued that all along? And do you paint in a way that's, I mean, I suppose this is speculation, but it's different to how you might have at a younger age?
These are very good questions, and I think I've sort of intimated that I was fairly casual about it. When I had opportunities when I was young, I was fairly casual because I was interested in a lot of other things as well and distracted. And then even when I went to Claremont School of Art, I sort of thought I knew, you know, that you just kind of slap it on and it'll be all right, because sometimes it turns out all right in the end. And so I think it's taken me this long to think in terms of the whole process, to get it right with the people that I'm actually dealing with, which is quite tricky. And, you know, I really want to honour them. That's really what I'm doing. But to be able to do that is quite difficult, and I feel it takes some diplomacy. And then to feel that I've done a job which reveals something of them, or, as I said before, honours them and shows them that they're very worthwhile people. Yes, I think I could never have done it when I was young. Much too casual, much too laissez-faire, and, you know, just let's enjoy ourselves.
But perhaps that looseness was necessary before the form came on top of it, because some people can be too restricted, I suppose.
Yes, it's interesting. You want to preserve that freedom, yes. But with portrait painting, it's just, to make it satisfying, it really does have to look like the person. To me, it does anyway.
You have to get the likeness, and that millimetre can make all the difference by the sound of it. And I think before we started recording, we were talking about truthfulness too, and I think it occurs to me that as for writing, you know, the truth is important to write as truthfully as you can. It's very important in a portrait to get the sense of, I guess, there's an integrity in that. And
that's right.
Do you look at what the future holds in terms of doing more of this? Are you looking at it just as each project for its own sake?
Yes, I think I've decided, while I'm interested in drawing flowers, painting flowers and and still life, that I really will concentrate more and more on portraits. And I think I'll just hang loose about what actually happens to the portrait in the end. If people want it, that's fine. But if they don't, well, never mind. And I would like perhaps to be commissioned, and that really hasn't happened, although somebody has bought the painting after I've painted it, and that's good. But I think need to be just quite relaxed about it, actually.
Mm.
Yes, mm. And find the pleasure and joy in just painting.
Yes, yeah. Do you have a web page at all?
No, I haven't done that. And I suppose that's... So I guess really the fact that I haven't had commissions and things is because I haven't really done much to get them.
No one can find you.
I had some cards made once, and I spent an afternoon just drawing people in charcoal.
Mm.
And we belong to the Rottnest Island Voluntary Guide. So when the guides turned 30, there were 7 guides who had been in it for 30 years. So I volunteered to do a charcoal drawing of each of them. And so they came one by one here. And I did a charcoal of their head, and they just put a yellow collar, to show the voluntary guide uniform. And then I framed them all, and they were in the salt store because the guides had an exhibition for the 30 years.
Oh,
and so that was lovely, really, but it didn't give any rise to any further, nobody else appeared to be interested in actually having it done, so it was a lovely thing to do. I really enjoyed it. But it was quite risky, of course. The first person I had was a guide who has a PhD in biological science. I think that's what it is. She's written books about plant life along the coast. And she's an absolute authority on Rottnest. And she can draw, of course, very well. And she just casually mentioned to me, she was my first candidate, casually mentioned that she'd actually done some portraiture too.
Oh, that's raising the stakes, isn't it?
Oh, she's a wonderful person. They're all wonderful people, actually.
Would you have changed anything as far as that goes, the timing of your art practice coming into full swing, or would you have done more earlier if things had been different?
I think I'm just very, very grateful that I've
had the opportunity.
Come to it now. Yes, yeah. Yes. And as I've indicated, I'm just at a stage where I can appreciate it properly and do it properly. Thank you.
Thanks to Kath for sharing her story with us today. It feels to me that all her life experiences have culminated in her artistic practice, and perhaps it is because of this that her work shows such depth and maturity. And again, thank you for listening. Until next time.